So we're being asked to treat this long weekend as a summer rehearsal. There's the worry that COVID will regain a foothold. It's only a tiny toehold at the moment, this marine engineer cluster. If we don't use the Tracer app when we're out and about, many of the patrons of the Malt Pub in Auckland didn't sign in, apparently, and of course it was visited by a person who later tested positive. The more we scan, the safer we'll be, says Ashley Bloomfield. As we try and accommodate a reviving economy with public safety, we have aspects of the ongoing pandemic to discuss again with Dr. Gary McLean, the New Zealander who's a professor in molecular immunology at London Metropolitan University and also a researcher with Imperial College. And he's an international authority on coronaviruses. Gary, good morning. Good evening to you.
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Hello to everyone in New Zealand from rainy London.
Rainy London. And here we go again, was one tabloid headline from your neck of the woods. I noticed a Welsh national firebreak lockdown. Science advisors wanted it UK-wide to halve your death toll. In the US, numbers are worse than ever. Record daily highs. We just heard that on the news. Spain, Italy, we've seen the field hospitals in Europe on TV as you move into the colder weather. You just have not had the breaks, the relief from this thing that New Zealand has.
No, second waves are in full swing now. Here we go again. Yeah, Europe, it's quite bad. No sign that they've even reached a peak. Even in the US, it looks like it's a third wave going on there. 83,000 cases just alone on Friday. It's dreadful. Globally, keeps going up as well, and all of this with no appreciable herd immunity. There's no effect of the immunity from all those people that have been infected, and it looks like we're just going to have to keep going with this thing for until there's a vaccine.
Yeah, it seems like a goal that can't be attained, doesn't it, herd immunity? Although a Kiwi pathologist in Peru, you wouldn't have heard this, but Patrick Emmanuel told us a version of it may have been achieved in a little population in the Amazon, but certainly not wholesale. So until there's a vaccine, will the way this virus is behaving carry on ad infinitum? Because I was reading in the US, for example, 90% of Americans have still to succumb to COVID. They're still to encounter it. There's a lot of hunting ground left.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, the immunity that's been generated from people that have already been infected, and some of these are estimates, it's very low. And we know the immunity as well. It's not long-lived. We just don't get that sustained immune response from the natural exposure that's protecting the rest of the population. So I think herd immunity, that concept, is just out the door at the moment, and we're going to have to wait till there's a vaccine that can really give that immunity to a larger proportion of the population.
Younger adults, Gary, appear to be accounting for the bulk of a lot of new infections, which is small consolation because although they mightn't get very sick, they'll pass it on to older people who can. So why are the young catching it now? Is it carelessness?
Yeah, I think definitely there's a sense of almost so what in the younger age groups. You know, I'm all right. I won't die. And my lifestyle and having fun is more important. And, you know, people going back to university, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, is driving some of that as well. But they don't seem to appreciate that they have an important role to play in stopping the virus spreading to those that are much more vulnerable. And you could argue, yes, it's careless. Some would even say it's selfish. But it's not everyone in the younger age groups. No. But that age group is really driving it forward, and it's going to spread, and it is already spreading into the older and more at-risk groups.
I've asked you a version of this quite a bit over the months, but we're told the virus hasn't essentially changed. But I see in your Telegraph newspaper, based on intensive care data, that there's evidence to show that this spike you've got will be far less deadly than the first wave. Do you agree with that? And what would it mean for a country like New Zealand if COVID got in here again? Would we have the severe version or a weakened one? What do you think about all that?
I mean, it does seem right now the second wave it's not translating into hospitalizations and deaths quite the same as the first wave. But also what we're being told is that testing is much more prevalent now. And the first wave here, really only the very, very sick people in hospital were getting a test. So those were only being called cases. and we were missing a huge number of cases. And they've estimated that there was, at the peak, 100,000 cases per day in the UK, and that's five times lower than what we got now. So what we're hearing is everyone's saying this is eventually going to translate into deaths. So I don't think yet there's a consensus that the virus is weakened. We know it's still circulating very, very well. It's truly effective at that. So really, any new introductions of the virus into the New Zealand, and I hear about this clump of people in Christchurch, these fishermen or what was it, boating engineers, you know, it's dangerous. I think you have to treat it very, very carefully.
It's been said this past week that Sweden's relaxed approach to COVID, and that's something you and I have discussed quite a bit too, has now proven to be a total failure. Do you agree, or do we wait and see what happens in the rest of Europe this winter? What's your view on Sweden now?
Yeah, well, even Sweden's got its own second wave. So from the point of view of containing the virus spread, yes, it looks like a failure. However, you know, their economy may be slightly better off compared to other states in Europe due to the, you know, more relaxed measures. I do think we should wait and see what happens over the winter. It's going to be a long winter. At least the people there seem to be happier, because in the UK at the moment, there's a lot of dissent about these control measures and these partial lockdowns, yes, and regional nature of it. And Manchester was just awful last week, what happened. And now it's Wales and Scotland. It's not looking good at the moment. And Sweden, I fear, will follow that.
It's almost impossible to follow your lockdowns in the UK. They seem so complicated.
I know. It's a real mess. I can't figure it out. I have to look at the website to see what I can and can't do.
Can I ask you about the study out of Johns Hopkins University? Blocking the immune system pathway may stop COVID infection and prevent severe organ damage, halting the protein that enables the virus to turn the immune system against itself, against healthy cells. Can you explain what implications this may have?
Right. So this study, it's looking at molecules that make up what they call the complement cascade. It's a part of the immune system that enhances the ability of antibodies and these special cells to clear microbes and other damaged cells from your body. It promotes inflammation and it attacks bacterial cell membranes. So what it appears is that SARS-CoV-2 can activate this particular pathway inappropriately, and that leads to more inflammation, more destruction of cells. This damage then recruits more immune system players. It all enhances the whole thing with the tissue destruction, and that might be one of the reasons why this virus is causing much more severe disease. The virus does activate this cascade by blocking the function of one particular protein that normally regulates the whole system. And these researchers have found that by blocking another molecule just upstream of that one, this is called factor D, it can avoid this whole chain of events and restore this normal regulation process. So it looks quite promising.
It does.
And there are drugs indeed already that seem to do that, that are in existence. So you don't have to go discovering them. So it looks quite good.
It sounds quite good. And the analogy is to think of our bodies as cars, and the virus manages to disable the brakes. Is that a nice, simple way of thinking about it?
Yeah, I like that analogy. I'd say that our immune response to the virus is the car. And what it shows is that much of the damage caused by this virus is our own immunity getting out of control. So the brakes on the car mechanism are failing. And if we reset that by these various mechanisms, it could prove useful in fighting severe disease. Of course, the other option is to hit the virus before all this is set in motion, and a vaccine could do that, or other drugs as well, but it's not always that easy.
No, it seems not. Blood type susceptibility to COVID-19, and we discussed this with you months ago, and then the notion was scoffed at, and now it appears to be gaining traction again.
Agreed, yeah, we did talk about this back in March, and that first study was kind of out on its own. It came out of Wuhan, the start of this whole pandemic. But there's now some newer studies corroborating it. It looks quite interesting. People with blood group A have a much higher risk of acquiring severe COVID-19 compared with the non-A blood groups. And blood group O has a significantly lower risk. And that's good because the majority of people, in fact, are type O blood. It's about 37 to 40%. So there may be something to it.
Is there precedent for this? It's been claimed that malaria is also more prevalent among people with A blood, but that cholera and the plague targeted people with O blood. How does that work?
Yeah, there's a few stories like that. Cholera in the type O, even other bacterial pathogens, including the plague, malaria, even some viruses, norovirus, rotavirus, HIV even, and really notably SARS, the first SARS, SARS-1. So sometimes there's an advantage being type O and sometimes not. It's a really complex mechanism as well because these blood groups, these antigens, they're really made up of a lot of sugar molecules that decorate the surface of cells. And the type of these sugar molecules determines the blood group structures and how that can influence how pathogens attach to cells. Some sugars are not liked as well, and they can almost repel the viruses and bacteria. Also, these blood groups have natural antibodies to the other blood groups that you don't have. And these can block pathogen adherence to cells. And there's even stories where these antibodies block pathogens themselves. So that could be the mechanism.
Yeah, interesting to hear you explain that. A study out of Spain found patients in both Italy and Spain with type O blood had a 50% reduced risk of severe infection. So the difference isn't negligible, is it?
No, that's impressive. It makes it look really, really promising for those with type O. And we know it is the most frequent blood group in people. But this ABO blood group is not the only antigen system. It's one of many. And there are past studies that are conflicting. But this finding is not new to COVID either. It's been seen with influenza pandemic strains in the past. But I think, you know, it's early days. More needs to be done to really nail it down.
Yes, and everyone can get sick. It's all the no matter what your blood group is, all the best, best. I meant to say for the months ahead. I know you won't be as optimistic as Donald Trump is about a vaccine just around the corner, but there's still a good chance we'll get one. In what, the first half of 2021? What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was looking at some of the phase three trials that are going on just a couple of days ago, and most of them are ending early part to mid part of next year. So we're not going to find the results and the data until then. But I think they're stockpiling and getting ready, and so they'll be able to ship them out pretty quickly once they get the final results in. And I think the world needs one, at least one more. So I think it will happen. So we're looking forward to that.
Very good to talk with you, Professor Gary McLean, and all the best. And no doubt we'll have further conversations.